I'm not the guy that comes in and says, here's what you have to do. I might have some ideas for them. Why do you think you're not there yet? And then I get them to come up with the answers, because I think that's what true coaching is. It's not somebody coming in, that's mentoring. A mentor will come in and say, here are the five steps you got to take. A coach is going to help you break down your own barriers by asking you the right questions.
As an employer, your business depends on your staff. They are the backbone of your company. But because you face unique challenges managing your team, you need to have the right resources. On this podcast, industry expert Alex Atwood tackles it all so you don't have to.
Hello and welcome to the show. So today, I'm so excited to be talking to my good friend and leadership guru, Eric Konovalov. Did I screw up your name, Eric?
I don't even know how to pronounce it right. I think you listen to 25 people, everybody's got a different pronunciation. They got me doubting how to pronounce my own last name.
It's however anybody says it, it's right.
That's so right.
Yeah, so Eric, so you've literally written the book on goal setting, and you're the founder and CEO of The Goal Guide, which is a service that helps clients define and achieve their goals. You're a former Marine, and you host a podcast for developing leaders called Lead, Sell, and Grow. It's great to see you, Eric, and thank you for joining the show.
Hey, it's great to be here with you, Alex. Always a fun time chatting with you.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Thank you. So we met at a, what would you call that? I wouldn't call it a retreat. Yeah, I guess I'd call it Landmark. I guess we're not going to get, yeah, hopefully we won't get in any litigation for that. But Landmark was a great program, and we went through quite a bit of it together. And in that, we started to hone our leadership skills. And then when I learned more about what you did as a career, I got very intrigued, because you had quite a bit to say during our forum days. And now I find that you're somebody who actually trains leaders, motivates teams, and all of that. But what I'd like to start with is about sort of your beginnings, your roots. And I know that you moved here from Russia, right? I think as a child. Mm-hmm. But tell me a little bit about that. Like, what was it like in Russia? Do you remember it there? And what happened when you came into the country?
Oh man, Russia. I do remember it there. There was no middle class in Russia. So you're either really poor or you're really, really wealthy. And that's usually the government.
Right.
I remember, I mean, it's Russia sucks. Like back in, so we're talking 1980s. It's different now. I haven't been back, but I hear it's different. But when I was growing up, it wasn't fun. You know, nobody had anything. Everybody was dirt poor. You had to go stand in line for bread and butter, potatoes. Like the government gave you vouchers and told you how much food you can buy and how much money you can, like the janitor. Nothing wrong with being a janitor, but they made the same amount of money as the doctor. Like it's just, it's bizarre world compared to living in the States. So yeah.
Yeah.
Russia sucked.
So how old were you when you came here?
I was 10.
Ah, but you still remember that? Like that
sucking? Yeah, I do remember that. I remember because everybody, and still my parents have that corrupt mentality, right? Everybody hides whatever they can from the government.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no joke. Like, and they come here and they try to scam the system. It's like, oh, okay, they're giving out. Well, all right, cool. So if there's welfare here, or, I mean, we came here, got food stamps. We came here, got, I mean, they didn't have a language job. So I'm super grateful for the resources that this country allows to immigrants. And that's what kind of propelled us. But I think every Russian that comes here, they try to find ways to hold on to that as much as possible because they're so brainwashed with how it used to be back there.
Yeah. I mean, what a culture shock on top of the fact that the political climate was just so out of whack at that point, right?
Man, yeah. I remember we walked into Giant, me and my mom, and she's never owned a car in her life in Russia. She never drove. We got here, it was like 1990, and they bought for, I don't know, like $700, some Ford Grand Marquis, and the ceiling was like dripped down, like just this big cloth hanging off a ceiling. And so it looked like a tank that my mom was driving. She never drove a car, didn't speak English. Half the time she's going down the wrong ways. Like it was definitely interesting stories, but we went to Giant and that's a big grocery store. My mom walks in and she just started crying. She's never seen that much food in the place.
Wow.
Like wow. It's since, yeah. So
wow.
People don't take US for granted.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Something that we take so for granted that you didn't. Did you speak English when you first came here? No. So was it?
I learned from Bugs Bunny.
Oh, you probably did, right? I mean, you were watching a lot.
I did. Yeah. I used to, I remember 10 years old, I'd greet people. What's up, Doc? Yeah. What's up, Doc?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. What challenges did you guys face as immigrants coming into the country? Obviously, financially, it was challenging, but you were able to take advantage of the systems that the U.S. provided. But did you find any other challenges? Because in being 10 years old, you're about to go into junior high. And, you know, those days, I'm sure it was difficult for somebody coming into the country that way. Did you have a community around you that was able to support you that were for the same place, or you were just the only Russian kid in school?
No. So we were Jewish refugees out of Russia. That's kind of how we rolled out of there. And the Jewish community welcomed us extremely well here as Jews. But, you know, you can practice religion in Russia. So I didn't know a first thing about any Jewish holidays, traditions, nothing. And there's this all boys, very expensive Hebrew school, not Hebrew school, but like a Jewish school for Orthodox Jewish boys in Baltimore called Talmudical Academy, TA. And so they gave immigrants like me free tuition because the Jewish community wants you to understand and learn about your religion and faith and all that. And I think I went in there in fourth grade, and it was me and a few others going through this program called ESOL, which is English as a Second Language, that they helped us learn to speak English. I think by my next year, they kicked me out of that school. I might have brought in like a ham and cheese sandwich for lunch or something. They did not welcome that very well.
Yeah. You know, that's fascinating. One of the things I'm actually exploring now, there's a friend of mine that wrote a book called Leading Without Authority. And the fundamental piece of that book is that you have communities, whether it's a school community, whether it's something that's based in religion, whether it's a card club of ladies that get together once a month or once a week or whatever that is, that community comes around and supports you and allows you to be able to achieve your goals together in a lot of ways that you don't really realize, right? So if you have a goal of like assimilating into a new country, or you have a goal of learning a language or something like that, well, if you can be plugged into a community that can provide support in and around that, then that's like, I think, game changing. And one of the things around business that is absolutely relevant is that you build small communities within your organization of like-minded people by sharing vulnerabilities in and out of work, then suddenly you start to build these bonds with people. And if you have a goal, then you can enroll someone in that vulnerable bond and have them co-elevate together. So it's super interesting. It was something like around sort of peer-to-peer relationships, on having authentic relationships and then being able to achieve goals together. That's interesting. And when you come into the community as an immigrant, it's daunting. You know, you don't know, especially for your mom, right? I mean, suddenly she's in this new country and there's grocery stores that have like celery up to the top of the ceiling. And it's pretty wild. Let's talk about your service. So when did you decide you were going to join the military and become a Marine? What motivated that?
I was a knucklehead. Like, seriously, when your parents are immigrants, they go to work. And my mom had a couple jobs. My stepfather was driving taxi cabs. So there was really very little adult supervision growing up. And I was always running around, suspended from school. I've been expelled 3 times just for stupid stuff. And senior year was coming up. College wasn't for me. And I'm like, well, I don't want to keep going down this path. I don't want to go to college. I saw some Army commercial. I knew nothing about the military. So I go into the recruiter's office for the Army. They had Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force in the same kind of hallway. So I go to the Army recruiter's office. The guy looked like Peter Griffin, okay, from freaking Family Guy. And I was 17 years old thinking I'm hot shit back then. And I was like, nah, this is not what, nah, I don't want to be like this guy. I know nothing about anything. I just judged it by the recruiter. Then I went into the Air Force office and it was like his twin brother. The Navy guy was out to lunch and I didn't even notice the Marine Corps office. So I'm walking out and literally somebody says, what are you, too chicken shit to come in here? I'm like, okay. I go in there and there's this guy. He looks like Johnny Bravo. His muscles are bulging out of his shirt. He's got pictures of him and just dudes on beaches with tanks and guns. I'm like, what do you do? So he told me about the Marines and I fell in love. And this was Saturday morning. That Monday, he came to my school. Every girl I had a crush on, Alex, didn't stop talking about this dude for a week. All right. Like all the guys hated, all the girls were like in shock and awe. And I'm like, that's how I chose to go into the Marine Corps. I wish it was a more patriotic story, but that's what it was. And I knew that, like, I didn't have any mentors. I didn't know anybody here who's been in military before. I didn't have any family before us. We're literally the first generation of immigrants here. Like my kids are the first born here. So that's how I joined the Marines. And this was signed up in 1998. It was before I turned 18. So my mom had to sign for me. And she said, I'll sign, but you promise me that you'll go to college. I was like, okay, just sign. All right. So it's a pretty important part of the story down the road. But so, yeah, I went in right after graduating high school in 99. And then 2001 hit just about the time I was understanding what my job is in the Marines.
Yeah.
And here we go. You know, it was Afghanistan right after 9/11, then came back. They sent us to desert training after being in the desert for 7 months in California. Came back from that, went to Iraq, came back. And yeah, it's just been kind of a really fun experience.
Yeah.
I'd say.
And you must have formed some bonds during that entire journey, right?
Yeah. No, we have, I got friends for life all over the world, all over the country. Like, definitely built some great bonds.
Yeah. Talk about building a foundation and a peer community, right? Do you find that a lot that you experienced in your time in service now to what you're doing in your career? Like in terms of sales and training and all of that, is there anything you could pull from that time that you think is?
Yeah. Just connecting with so many different types of people. So I was one of two Russian speaking Marines on the East Coast. And I got asked to go to Guantanamo Bay. I didn't get asked. I was told I'm going to Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
Because what happened was you need somebody to speak Russian, because if there's some of the folks we caught in Afghanistan, they came through, they were with the IMU, which is the Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan. And those guys speak either Pashto, Farsi, or Russian. Mm-hmm. And so if they had a Pashto linguist or a Farsi linguist from Afghanistan, they would just start speaking Russian. So there are these linguists that they're government contractors that are there, and their whole job is to, during interrogations, to translate between different agencies and these detainees. And my job was, a part of it was to be a linguist there for the Russian speaking guys, but there were very few of them. And the other part was to lead these linguists. Like, I was in charge of these civilian linguists, right? So picture a trailer kind of, and you got like 8 computers on one side and 8 computers on right across from them. So you got 8 people facing walls, sitting kind of back to back. And they have 2 screens in front of them. All they're doing is just reading the letters that are coming in, translating them in English, and then sending them to analysts to see if there's any code or anything like that, right? Before giving the actual letters to the detainees. Well, these guys are from Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, from all different parts of the region. They don't like each other.
And they're in the same room.
They're in the same room. They grew up hating each other. Now they're in the same freaking room.
And wait, and so you're the one responsible.
I'm in charge of them.
Wow.
I'm responsible for them to translate as many documents as possible throughout the day. So I'm setting their schedule. We ran 3 shifts. Who's coming in? When? Who's sitting next to whom? Like,
did you set up the seating chart?
No, that was already, like, I stepped in. It's like my job there. It's like a floating billet. So I'm there for 6 months. Somebody else is going to come in, take over. And these linguists, some of them stay, some of them go back and forth. So the seating chart was already there. But then what happened when the new guy came in, clueless as can be, I was like, I think 25 years old at the time. These guys, they would take me out. They'd be like, hey, you know, can you move my seat or can you do this? And I would quickly learn, when you please one, you piss off the next. When somebody's like, hey, can you change my schedule? I didn't really know what to ask. Why was the schedule the way it was to begin with? So I would change one guy's schedule, and then 30 people want their schedules changed. And it's like, dude, it was such a learning experience on how to deal with different people and just try to understand the why behind their request. And then try to think of the kind of what's going to happen if you do say yes versus no, and think through all these little things that I've never even thought to think about.
Wow. So it really forced you to be able to dig in and find out the why, as you said. That's really interesting. Did any bonds form between people that were mortal enemies? Did you see that happen? And did people get cohesive after a while, or did it continue to manifest itself?
No, people definitely got cohesive because I'm a party animal, man. I, you know, I got the Gitmo and we threw parties and everybody's invited. And some people came and some people didn't. But what they quickly realized is I'm an immigrant just like them. Just because I'm wearing a U.S. Marine uniform, my roots are, I know what these guys had to go through. So I connected with them on that level. Like, hey, so when did you move to the U.S.? Tell me about your kids. These are older people. Just a couple of weeks ago, when that whole thing went down with Afghanistan, I reached out to a few of them who I'm still connected to and like, hey, you know, this is pretty jacked up. Do you still have family? What's going on? And we've been having conversations that way. But yeah, so we took it out of the workplace. Obviously, there were a few women who just, they came, they did their job, they went back home. Like they never went out and partied, but I tried to get them out and socialize as much as possible.
Yeah. Wow. And so it really becomes relevant when you talk about the current political climate and how many people are out there doing that and how, yeah. Wow. Well, that definitely sets you up as a coach for sure.
Yeah. Now, that was, yeah, that was definitely an experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So then kind of paint a picture for me of the transition from military into sales career and then from sales career into business coach and writer. You've had multiple transitions across since you first got to this country at 10 years old. So,
yeah. So just, I think one thing you mentioned goal setting earlier, I think what I realized is I just want to be free. I love, love, love freedom. And what freedom means to me is that I can do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, without worrying about anything. That's freedom. So all these transitions, what I teach as a coach, or if I'm ever talking to anybody, is I think a lot of people get attached to the plan. And I'm saying, forget the plan. Be attached to your dream and your goal. Like if you wanted to go to California, do you really need to know exactly every single way you're going to get there? No, you could start out driving on 495. There's an accident. You're going to take a left turn and go another way and another way. So I'm never attached to the road. And so it's really easy for me to be like, oh yeah, I'll go try that. I'll go try something else. This didn't work, or maybe it did work, or maybe something else will work. So the goal doesn't change. The plan, we change it. Like Mike Tyson, that wise philosopher, said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right?
That's right, yeah.
And that's it. And what I'm saying is you don't even have to get punched in the face. Just think of a better, like, is there a way to do it better? And go do it that way. So I'm saying that because how I got to transition from military to sales was I went to my commanding officer. We were a very small unit when I was leaving. And I loved my commanding officer. He was just an awesome, awesome guy. He was a lieutenant colonel. I went to him. I was like, hey, sir, I've been in. So why did I even get out? I was dating a girl for 3 years at this time. It was time for me to reenlist for my third term. I was in for 8 years. I came to her. I'm like, hey, I'm reenlisting. And she's like, listen, if you reenlist, I don't think this can work because this isn't the life I signed up for. You can't be away all the time. So,
so you joined the military for women and then you left the military for women.
What a romantic I am, you know? So, okay. But, you know, I was madly in love and I still am. So I got out, we got married. We've been together for 17 years, married for 14, got two beautiful kids, zero regrets, right? The only regret I had, I can't even say it was a regret. The only kind of like kicking ass I had was in 2009 or 2019 in July, when July 8th came, I said, I would have been fully retired from the military today.
Oh, wow. How many years ago? How many years ago now was it that you left?
2007.
Got it.
Anyway, so I went to my commanding officer. I'm like, sir, I've been doing this since high school. Like literally high school ended. I went to senior week and then right to boot camp in Paris Island. Like, what the hell do I do as a civilian? I've never been a grown up in a civilian world. He looked at me and they called me K because they couldn't pronounce my last name either. He's like, K, with all the bullshit you've sold me through the years, you got to get into sales. I'm like, okay, I don't know what sales is, but I'll go get into it. So I send out a resume to like all the monster.coms and Indeeds, whatever was out there. And I think I got 155 calls from every Aflac agent out there. But what they don't realize is that when you're in the military, people think it's risky, and it is risky in a sense, but it's safety. Like the first of the month and the 15th of the month, you get a paycheck. All your healthcare benefits are covered. You don't have to worry about anything when it comes to money. It's not a lot of money, so you got to know how to manage your money. But you know that on the 1st and on the 15th, there's going to be a paycheck. So the idea of commission only was just so foreign to me at that time at 25 years old. I'm like, okay, great, commission only. But how much do I get paid on the 1st and the 15th?
And oh, that's great.
I think as I was leaving the military, maybe my pay after 8 years, like 40 grand a year, maybe even less, like 35 grand a year. I was too stupid to take into consideration all the perks that come with it, like housing, food, medical, dental, all that. So looking at it now, it's probably more like 80,000 by the time I was getting out. But on paper, it was like 35. And I got a job for 40 grand a year selling copiers plus commission. And my first year, my first full year, I made $99,000.
Wow.
I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. You know, I remember first time I ever got my first big check was $7,000. That was a commission check. And I was like, I didn't know you can make this kind of money. Like, that was like a whole mind shift. Damn. And then I made a goal. I'm like, okay, I never want to make another check less than $7,000 of commissions on top of my. And then they just started growing and growing. And I went on to manage a team for Xerox. I managed their Baltimore team. And then I got an opportunity to work for kind of like a mom and pop smaller company. And when I went there, their sales reps have been there for 16 years, have all outsold me, were more experienced, sold more than I did, and wanted nothing to do with a manager coming in who's younger and dumber than they were. Okay. So I didn't know what the hell to do. I'm like, okay, guys, we got to try doing this, because I learned from Xerox, right? Xerox has really good training, corporate. This wasn't the environment. Like, they didn't even show up to the office every day. I didn't know Xerox made their employees be there at 8 a.m. Here, you could like not see a sales rep for 3 weeks, but the numbers are coming in. Zero yeah. management, just awesome people who have been there for 16 years. And I don't know how to manage that or lead that.
Yeah.
And so I'm an early riser. I go to the gym early. I started Googling kind of leadership principles and how to lead people and how to herd cats and all that stuff. John Maxwell kept coming up. I'm on a treadmill or I'm on a stair stepper. I'm watching John Maxwell videos. And those, I started applying what I was learning. Next thing you know, we're getting a little more closer. I'm being invited to barbecues on Saturday and the team starts growing at that point. So
they respected you as their leader at that point or as their manager.
Yeah, I think so. But it wasn't, I think initially I came in with authority, telling people what to do.
Yeah.
Because that's what works at Xerox, does not work there.
Right.
And so I had changed my approach. It wasn't like, I need to tell you what to do. It's like, I need to ask you, how can I help you?
That is brilliant. So that's when we started out the podcast, I referenced the Leadership Without Authority book. And I referenced the way of actually supporting a team is being in service to the team. So as opposed to being an authoritative leader that sort of dictates things and tells people what to do, you switch your role to just being a humble Sherpa, ensuring that the team and the health of the team is good and that the peer-to-peer relationships are good and that it's thriving and just being able to put structures in there. And it sounds like whatever you did allowed that to happen if they're inviting you to barbecues and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it starts with the small stuff. And number one is you got to get the ego out of the way. Like, your title doesn't make you. Like, the title was director of sales. And it's the first time I went, I used to be a sales manager. Now I'm a director of sales, whatever the hell that means. But at the end of the day, like, we're there to help people grow, meet their goals. And I know this now. This is almost 10 years after that point. I didn't know that then. I thought my job was to make sure that they did what they're supposed to do. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work well. If you want to influence people, it does not work.
Yeah, I totally agree. So let's cut over now. So now you're a business coach and you're taking what you applied, right? Through all these different experiences between working with linguists that have like real political and massive differences in terms of culture, all the way to a sales team that's already sort of mature and has their own structures inherent and that you need to sort of go in and refine and start to build leadership around. So now, what's your favorite type of business to work with, or what's your favorite type of environment to apply your skills to?
Man, I just love people. I don't have a favorite type of business. I have favorite type of people.
Mm.
And those are people who are somewhat self-aware that there's more for them. They don't know exactly how to get there. Maybe they have some belief issues, like they see this dream, but they don't think it could be done for them. It's not there for them. I help break those limiting beliefs and help them achieve those dreams. But it's got to be somebody that wants it, doesn't know how. So that can show up in the form of, I'm working with a couple right now who started a recruiting firm, and they're recruiters, and they want to take it to the next level. And they're so hungry, and they're so awesome because they just want it so bad. And those are the type of people that are fun to work with, because I'm not the guy that comes in and says, here's what you have to do. I might have some ideas for them. But I'm like, well, why do you think you're not there yet? And then I get them to come up with the answers, right? Because I think that's what true coaching is. It's not somebody coming in. That's mentoring, right? A mentor will come in and say, here are the 5 steps you got to take. A coach is going to help you break down your own barriers by asking you the right questions. And that's why I love, and it's a powerful, thought-provoking conversation, which at the end of, they come up with their own answers. They come up with the options that they have in front of them. They select the options that they're going to take before our next call, and they take them. And do you know how empowering that is?
Yes, absolutely. It allows them to actually discover for themselves what's to be done as opposed to taking direction. Absolutely.
That's right.
100%. And that's the most powerful way to actually transform yourself or be able to expand beyond whatever limitations you have, is to discover it in you.
I totally think so too.
Wow, that's awesome. So let me ask you, like, specifically, what changes did you have to make to go from being a winning sales manager, director, to being an author and a business coach? Was there anything that you had to do for yourself, like an adjustment, like an expansion, like a limiting belief that maybe you had that you broke through?
I still have them. I'm blind to them, but every time I hire a coach, first of all, never work with a coach who doesn't have a coach.
Right.
That means they don't believe in the coaching process. There is no end. There's always the next thing I need to learn. So what steps did I take from there to here? One was kind of shedding the ego and realizing, like, yeah, I've been successful, but I really don't know shit. And there's just so much to learn. Two is take the focus away from me, put it on my clients, right? It's not about how much money. Because I used to think, like, all right, well, what's my commission going to be? I had commission breath everywhere. Like, all right, if we do this, we'll make this much money. Yeah. And customers smell it. You know, that sucks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, like, what's my next thing? What do I want to do? And there's this discovery process of journaling. Like, I got journals, like, right here, that anything that I write down, my thought process on paper, usually comes to fruition because I take time to think. And I think that was one big change I had to make was, when do I create time to think about my future? People don't do that. People just let the future happen to them most of the time. And then they're frustrated with what's happening. So what happens then is they try to change their habits, right? Well, I'm super busy. I gained 45 pounds. I'm just going to eat differently. They might lose a little bit of weight, but before you know it, they're at 45 pounds heavier again. And as this cyclical cycle, if you really pay attention to your life, you're always doing the same stuff in different kind of areas. It's so weird how that happens. And like Carl Jung said, until we make the unconscious conscious, it'll rule our life and we will call it faith. And so what I realized, I read this book, or I listened to this book. It's called Conversations with God. And it's written by Neil Donald Walsh.
It's a beautiful
book. Oh my God, what a,
it's amazing.
What a powerful book.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is one of the most powerful books I've ever read.
It was an eye opener. And I liked listening to, first of all, the trilogy. And I heard there's a fourth one out. I haven't listened or read that one, but the trilogy is like 36 hours on Audible. What I like about it is that it's actually interviewing. Like, it's like two people talking, and it's this guy pretty much interviewing God and asking him any question. Like, the questions are so wise. I think that conversation actually happened with God. Like, yeah. I can't imagine somebody coming up with those questions.
Apparently it did. It did happen.
It did. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And in that book, what I think where the switch kind of came on for me is I realized that I'm a creator. There is no destiny. Like, God doesn't have a plan for you. God, you're no different than a seedling that was planted into the dirt. And your job, just like anything else in nature, is to grow to your full potential. Like, a tree doesn't stop halfway and it's like, I'm done. I don't want to grow anymore. naturally that tree is going to grow until it can't grow anymore. But people, we don't do that. Why? And I wasn't doing that, right? I come home, a cheesesteak sub, and I'd watch Seinfeld. And there's my routine. I'd get excited about Fridays because I get to go drink. I still get excited about Fridays because I get to go drink, but the rest of the week is more intentional, right? Because I mean, look, yeah. I like socializing. I like tequila. Like, to me, there's nothing wrong with that. But I also know now that any future I want, I have the power to create it. I may not know how, but as soon as I decide on wanting something, like wanting to write a book, I told you I've been expelled 3 times from school. My wife, there was like a pride folder for me. All my suspensions, expulsions, all the report cards with D's, because I did some stupid stuff. I held on to it. My wife found it and she's like, we're throwing this away. I'm like, what are you kidding me? That's like a trophy case for me. We're not throwing that away. She threw it away. She's like, I never want our kids to see this stuff.
Yeah.
And at that point in my life, if you would have told me, hey, you're going to be a book author, you're going to have a podcast, you're going to have followers, you're going to be able to influence people, I'd laugh at you. Like, you're a fool. You have no idea what you're talking about. I'm an idiot.
Hmm.
And that belief that I can create whoever it is I want to be and whatever I did in high school really doesn't have to matter towards my future. Like, what I did yesterday has nothing to do with what I can create tomorrow. It's such a freeing belief that I live by.
It's powerful words, Eric. Amazing. Yeah. That transformation and that story of empowerment, unbelievable. I have one more question for you. And I do this on the show. There's something called what's your word? I don't know if you can see that's probably backwards,
yep.
But I'm going to ask a question out of here, completely random.
Okay.
Promise I'm not picking it. All right, here we go. Oh, this is a good one. So what is your perfect day?
Yeah, I'm glad I've prepared for that. I literally journal out my perfect day. Like I told you, I'm a creator. I got up for lunch. And my perfect day in my perfect world, I have a house that's right on the beach. And when I roll over, I see my wife, she's still sleeping and she's just smiling. And I get out of bed and I step outside and I just look at the sun rising over the horizon as I'm hearing, like I'm just watching the sunrise. And I just get that feeling of gratitude. You ever get that feeling of gratitude? And the first Absolutely. Thing in the morning, that's how I want to start my day every day. Yeah. Just I'm out there with a journal. I'm looking at the sun and I'm just creating my next perfect day. I'm just describing it. I'm so grateful for everything that's happening and everything that's going to happen in my life.
Mm. You just feel that's so how full. I start. You feel full.
Feel so full, man.
So full. And for me, it shows up as being warm. Like there's a warmth around here that shows up in my body, like warm and full. And just having joy, just like pure yeah. joy, you know?
That's it.
And if we're
and
not
you don't need much for that.
No, you don't. No. And you can really have that really anytime just by really being grateful for what you have. So
great book is Ask and It Is Given. And it actually gives you exercises you can do to get your vibrational level up. And the highest vibration, obviously, is love and joy and happiness. All right. So after that, I'm heading to the gym. So I got my mental work done. I'm going to do some physical work. I come home and I have a dance party with my kids. So like literally, I just had this idea this week and I bought 4 Sonos speakers. They're coming in next week and we're going to have dance parties in the morning before they go out to school. So I spend time with them in the morning. They go out to school and then I have a couple of coaching sessions in the morning before lunch. Take my wife out to lunch somewhere, come back, maybe do a training session for some corporate team and back home with the kids. Doing whatever they want to do the rest of the day. End of the day, I'm reading, I'm thinking, I'm reflecting, I'm planning. And that's kind of my perfect day, man.
Mm.
It's simple.
Very simple and full of joy and production. I love it.
Full of joy and production and creating.
That's right. Well, thank you, Eric. This was so entertaining. I really enjoyed myself here. This was an amazing, amazing interview. Thank you for sharing so much.
It was fun.
And around your book, please tell me where I can buy your book and the type of people that will benefit from it.
Yeah. So the book is really designed for salespeople. If you're stuck, it's focusing on B2B sales. I've never really done like knocking on doors, selling vacuum cleaner stuff or calling people at home about mortgages. And my hat's off to you guys. I'm not the guy to learn from about that stuff. However, If you are tasked with cold calling businesses and C-level executives and getting them to make 10, 100,000, million-dollar decisions, if you're brand new out of college and you don't know where to start, this book will give you a plan. First three chapters are all about mindset and how to even start your day and set your day up for success and planning and research. Mm. The next section is all about from the cold call through close. And then the third section is all about how do you maintain that relationship? I call it how do you become a magnet for new business? And that's by treating your current customers so well that all your new business comes from referrals and what steps you take. Because a lot of people, they'll make a sale and then they don't see the customer for another 3-4 years until it's time to make another sale. And it's just so silly.
Yeah.
They waste time. So there's some ideas in this book. And the biggest compliment I get about my book, it's called B2B Sales Secrets, and it's available on Amazon. And do not get the Audible. I'll tell you right now, the Audible sucks. The guy that did my Audible thing, and I'm a novice, it sucks. Don't get it. The voice will put you to sleep. Unless you want to go to sleep, then get the Audible. But on Kindle, and if you want to read it, it's awesome. The biggest compliment I get about my book is that anybody who knows me, they say, when I sit down to read the book, it's as if I'm sitting with you and we're having a conversation. And I love that because that was kind of how I wrote it. So yeah, go get the book. You'll love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, thank you so much. So many gifts that you gave us here on the podcast. I'm looking forward to working with you in many, many ways, and enjoy your perfect day.
You too, Alex. You're awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks
for having me.
Absolutely. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Off the Clock. Don't miss next week's tips around innovation and HR. Subscribe to the show. You can catch us on YouTube, Apple, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, be kind and thrive.